This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the handling of the investigation into the Clinton scandal has not only left a cloud of distrust over Hillary Clinton's campaign, it's tainted the Department of Justice as well. What will the next Congress and the next administration need to do to restore public confidence in our government? Oklahoma Senator James Lankford will be with us in just a little bit. And with just 5 days until the election, more Christian voters are beginning to focus on the issues rather than the candidates as they make their decisions. What role are the party platforms playing in that decision? Dr. Stephen King, professor at Regent University, is here to join me for that conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com, TonyPerkins.com. You can find lots of resources there on the website for you for this election that will help you communicate to your family and friends the importance of this election and help them make their decision. Again, that's at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. And yes, it is Thankful Thursday. Okay. All right. Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma is going to help us sift through the Clinton scandal. And really, the cloud is not only over the Clinton campaign, but also the Department of Justice. What will the next administration and the next Congress have to do to restore confidence in our government, in the FBI, and the Department of Justice? He serves on the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
Well, Senator, I know you are on top of all of the developments here, but it now is well known through WikiLeaks, through emails that have come forward, that there was information being passed to the Clinton campaign that kind of heads up from Assistant Attorney General Peter Kaczyk, that there was, I would say, would be inside information, or at least it was helpful information. And then we've seen the hesitancy back and forth with the FBI, the conflict with the Department of Justice on whether or not to proceed with this investigation. What do we know where things stand? How much confidence do you have that the FBI is actually going to see this thing through to the end?
What I see right now are individuals within the Department of Justice, individuals within the FBI, individuals within the State Department that are career individuals that are frustrated with what's happening up the food chain with them, and they've eventually just gotten sick of it and said, this is what's been ongoing for a while, and we're going to just start talking about it because we can't stand to be able to watch our agency undercut in basic decency in the process. When four different field offices from the FBI all had open investigations on the Clinton Foundation, and we're all trying to get Washington, D.C. to pay attention to the clear evidence that was there, what they now call an avalanche of evidence. And what is continuing to hang out there just on the Clinton Foundation, separate from the email scandal, that's very significant. And what I think a lot of people that I've talked to of late seem to be putting the two together, these are two entirely different investigations from two different investigation teams. One is under what's called white-collar crime because the public corruption group within the Department of Justice and the FBI wouldn't take it, and it is investigating whether there's a pay-for-play scandal going on with the Clinton Foundation, where half of the people that she met with initially were all individuals that were donors to the Clinton Foundation, and whether there is a quid pro quo that's happening there, that is clear public corruption if it's proven to be true. Then there's a separate investigation dealing with classified documents and the mishandling of documents, and then the actions after that, possibly to be able to cover up the investigation or to quickly close an investigation, which should not have been closed as quickly as it was. So there's separate cover-up conversations, and there's two different criminal investigations that are currently ongoing within the FBI.
Understand that there are two distinct investigations, but I guess my question for you, are they really related, not the investigations, but the acts? Could it be that the private server was set up to protect the play pay-to-play scheme that the Clintons had established with their foundation so that it would be on the FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act. And just because of that setup, it got caught up into the emails that should of classified nature that should not have been on a private server.
That's correct. Yeah, they can be connected on that. We've never been able to get a good, clear answer from the Clintons about why they had the separate server. They've tried to muddy the water, but no other cabinet official has ever had a server at their home to be able to handle classified information and private information and intermingled the two the way that Hillary Clinton did. So it was not only for her, as she said, her daughter's wedding and yoga classes, it was also classified information and Clinton Foundation, and that there were individuals that were employed by the Clinton Foundation and by the State Department simultaneously that had a different level of access into that information and to her appointments and her schedule. So there is some intermingling, but they're legally two separate things, but they can certainly be interconnected when you look at how they operated.
And we were brought back to this by yet another investigation unrelated to this with former Congressman Anthony Weiner and his laptop shared with his wife, who happened to be the chief of staff for Hillary Clinton. Those two, as we understand, were that was unrelated, but stumbled upon evidence which caused the FBI chief to reopen this investigation. Is that correct?
And Tony, one of the challenges, that's correct, by the way, but one of the challenges with that is not just that they stumbled upon the information, but this also challenges the integrity of the FBI and how they handled the information and where were the boundaries for the investigation established by the Department of Justice. As we look at it now, this is a personal computer that clearly multiple emails in the hundreds of emails Huma Abedin was sending things from her office computer to her home computer. That would tell me, if that is happening, that the FBI should have gone to her and said, we need to get your home computer as well. Where were you accessing this private information that you were sending to yourself so we can see what is there as well? That was not done. And so it's an odd situation to say this is new information from one of the individuals that was in the investigation clearly, but wasn't a person that all of their information was being collected. A typical FBI investigation is broad in scope, and if you were under investigation, they're going to go after your home computer, your work computer, your phone, any other iPad or any other device that you have and be able to get the information from those so they can clearly do an investigation. To say they ended the investigation and closed it, but hadn't even looked at some of those other devices, smacks of the FBI being in a hurry rather than being thorough in this. Let me just compare it to James Cartwright. General Cartwright, who's currently under indictment from the FBI for mishandling classified information, that was a four-year investigation that was very thorough. This was done in a few months with a limited number of pieces in the investigation. And so, again, it calls into who was controlling the FBI and telling them that they had to get this done quickly and had a limited number of places they can look rather than let's get the facts out as they normally do.
So, Senator Lankford, let me ask you a question. Given what you know, what we've now seen unfold, and this has not been something that just, you know, popped up. This has been ongoing now for quite some time, months. Does this cause you to question the integrity of the Department of Justice and the FBI?
I think what this causes me to question is, why are all these things that are flying around currently, why are there so many unanswered questions and there's so much dispute? When you get into FBI and they make a decision about how they're going to open an investigation and handle it, there will always be back and forth and pressure from everyone. But it's very, very different in this situation when you've got four different field offices all saying to Washington, D.C., there's evidence here and we need to be able to move on it, and they're not. That should not happen. And my concern is, you go back to the Nixon administration, it wasn't the break-in was the problem, it was the cover-up after the fact. It was the Attorney General and others leaning in and saying, no, we need to stop or move or shift the information or make sure we hide this. That became the big issue in Watergate, not the break-in itself. And my concern is always on a public corruption side. Our nation should be a nation where justice is blind, and regardless of your last name, we're all under the law the exact same way. I want to maintain the integrity of the FBI and the Department of Justice and the Attorney General. If we undercut the rule of law in the nation, Wiener cut a bedrock foundation piece in our nation.
But arguably, Senator, that's exactly what's happened through all of this,
at least
the evidence we've seen thus far. So when this is settled, if and when it's settled, I'm sure it will at some point, there's a cloud that remains over what you just said, a very bedrock principle, a rule of law. And there are many people now, Americans, myself included, questioning whether or not that principle is still in place, given how Hillary Clinton's been treated in this.
Correct, and that has to be part of the investigation that we finish. This is not about a political investigation. This is not even about a presidential campaign. This is about, is someone undercutting the rule of law, and is someone using their public office for political gain or for personal gain? If that is so, that violates a basic principle of our American republic.
So this is
more than just a presidential conversation.
Right.
This is a foundational issue for our country that needs to be investigated.
And that begs the question, Senator Langford, if Hillary Clinton were to succeed in this election, and the fact that she controls, not specifically the FBI director, but she controls the attorney general, she controls the appointment of those positions, confirmed by the Senate, obviously. But how could we ever trust her to see this investigation through under her administration?
Well, again, I go back to the Nixon administration. Just after the election there and his reelection is when all the news continued to break on it and the facts continued to be able to come out. And that actually brought down a president to resign early on in the office because it became very clear that all the deception was happening and the misuse of office and the misuse of funds. Again, I'm not looking for another season like that as a nation. That was a terrible season for us as a country in undercutting who we really are as a nation. It took us decades to recover from that. And I hope that does not occur again. But my concern is that could very well be so.
Well, and it as you mentioned, it took decades, and there were many, many reforms that came out of Watergate that we still see today in government. So I would imagine that on the other side of this, in order to restore confidence in that bedrock principle of the rule of law, we're going to have to see Congress step up and initiate some reform efforts.
That's correct, and it has to be done the right way. Let me give you, for instance, the budget process was reformed in 1974 after Watergate, and that budget process that was created has just been disastrous because of how it was done. It's created such an incredible process, an incredibly difficult process, that since 1974, there's only been 4 years the budget process has actually worked. That was a direct product of some of the Watergate work and a separate part of government to try to restore some of the trust. So what is done has to be done well. It has to be thought out well and be done right. But when you talk about reforming the FBI and you talk about reforming the way we handle justice, the most basic principle is the one that has to be watched. Accountability, engagement, the inspector general system that should be in place and should be completely independent. All of those things can be done, but it requires real oversight.
Well, from my perspective, from what I've seen now, there's a lot of work to be done to restore that confidence. Senator, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it greatly.
You bet. Glad to be able to do it.
All right. Senator James Langford of Oklahoma. All right. All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about party platforms. I'm going to talk a little bit later about George Barna's research showing in key swing states like Ohio that social conservatives, Christian conservatives are breaking. They're making their decision, and a lot of it's based on issues. What role is the party platforms playing in that? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Stephen King when we return. Don't go away.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. For more information, Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. As we are just 5 days away from the election, those that have been kind of undecided, sitting on the sidelines, evidence shows they're beginning to make their choices. And according to George Barna, who's been doing research in swing states like Ohio, he shows some pretty significant movement. He says that after the convention, going out of the convention, he said 67% of what he calls the sage cons, that's the spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, were supporting Mr. Trump, 67%. Last week, that number had shifted to 92% of the sage cons in Ohio are now supporting Trump. And what he showed was that the most common motivation for backing Mr. Trump were the issues. 75% said that's what made up their mind. So with that in mind, how important are the political party platforms? We've talked about that before here on the program. Some say they're extremely important, while others say they're worthless pieces of paper. Well, let's talk now with Dr. Stephen King. He's Associate Dean of Academics. He's chair of the Department of Government, History, and Criminal Justice at Regent University. He's also the co-author of 2 books, God and Caesar, The Biblical Keys to Good Government and Community Action, Administration and Public Interest, Principles, Policies, and Practices. Dr. King, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these party platforms. How significant do you think they are? Significant of a role are they playing in this election cycle?
Well, normally they do have a nominal effect in some cases, depending upon how they were created, who was on the committees to put them together. They can have a greater impact. I believe the platform did have more of an impact with regard to the early 1980s and the Reagan administration, and again with the
90s to a certain extent with the Clinton administration. But this year, as your listeners know, this is a very, very different year. And my guess is, and my belief is that what we're seeing is almost a movement away from looking at the policies, even the principles to a great extent, and we've become enamored, maybe even captured by what is taking place on the stage with the Democrat and the Republican individuals who are running for the nomination of the presidency, for the election of the presidency. So I think to a great extent we're moving away from a policy-oriented area, and we're being captured and snared by what has been said, how salacious the comments may be, or how indicty one can be towards the other. So I would like to believe that they do have an importance, and they should have an importance, but I think they're being upended to a certain extent by what's taking place and what has been taking place over the last year or so, and particularly.
Yeah, I think clearly in this cycle, you know, we have, characters, individuals who are, larger than life and have dominated their, as you said, we've got the things that are driving people. You've got, a guy who is addicted to sexting. His computer is confiscated, and it leads to a reopening of an investigation of Hillary Clinton. You've got hot mics with vulgar video on the other side. And so those are the things that are driving a lot. But as we come down to the end, and people have character concerns with both sides, the next level then I guess they go to are those policies. And that's what George Barna's information is showing, is that they're looking now to those policies to make that final decision when they were standing back because of their concerns over the character. But as you've looked at the platforms from the two parties, have you ever seen a clear contrast between the two parties and what we have today?
No, I don't think I have, Mr. Perkins. It is really a stark contrast when you look at them. I was actually went on your site and printed off what you had with looking at several of the issues. I mean, if you just begin with ones that you've talked about here, social experimentation in the military and terrorism and transgender bathrooms in schools, et cetera. I mean, these are clear, distinct differences. And I think to a great extent, the way I would look at it is this way. How do I use the platform to make an informed decision?
Right.
And I think what I would do at this point, if I am a Christian, or even if I'm a non-Christian, but I'm a, let's say what we would call a prudent individual, Russell Kirk, the famous conservative philosopher, used the phrase politically prudent individual. How would I use the platform in order to engage that? I would basically do it in this way. I would suggest that there are two primary things we need to look at in those platforms. One are principles. And so if you have a principle, for example, that is talking about right to life, or you have a principle that is discussing freedom of expression or protection of sovereign territory or whatever it might be, those are principles. They're broad-based statements that evoke some kind of vision or purpose or meaning in not only individuals, but in groups, in society, institutions, etc. If you, based upon your makeup, based upon your worldview, based upon your ideology, although Kirk didn't like the word ideology, but based upon how you view the world around you, and that particular principle resonates with you, it agrees with your worldview or your view of the world itself around you, then you have to look at the second level, which is the policies, or some might refer to them as the practicalities.
Right.
In other words, what are those policies that are going to logically derive from those principles? So, for example, does the RNC's platform advocate for protection of human life? Christians who believe in the protection of human life, who believe that life was created in the image of God, Imago Dei, then that particular person has to find a policy that is going to be connected, or it's going to emanate, or it's going to derive from that particular principle.
Because then it's measurable. They can actually track it.
Well, then it's measurable, certainly. Absolutely.
Right, right.
Because then I can say, what kind of policy has the state made or what kind of policy has Congress
right.
made, et cetera.
Hey, Dr. King, we have to leave it. We're up against a break. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you. We'll have you back on again to talk more. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, very important number that we were looking forward to this week is out. It is productivity number. I said that, remember, I said this on Monday, remember that productivity number is a number also that is the last productivity number we're going to get, see, or hear anything about prior to the election. Election being some 7-8 days away. Not even that. What am I thinking? So, look, this is a politically driven number. Make no mistake about it. I said on Monday that there's no doubt it is going to hit what they were anticipating, 1.8%. That would have been a 2.1% swing. Instead of that, we got a 3.7% swing. It was a negative 0.6% last look. It is now 3.1%. That is, well, I'm just going to say that's a very unrealistic number. As a matter of fact, I don't believe that number. It is not an accurate number, but it sure is going to give President Obama, Hillary Clinton, and those a few days to do a couple of victory laps over where the economy is going. It's not about where the economy is going. It's about where the economy has been. The economy has been in the hopper now for 7 straight years with 2% GDP growth and no productivity. But this is indicating some productivity and things may be turning around, but none of the other indicators that would show us what productivity is, manufacturing, ISM service, none of that is indicating that we could possibly be in and around a 3% productivity number. So don't place a lot of faith in it. Don't get too excited about the victory laps that you see going on. They are not accurate.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's @TPerkins. All right, I want to go back to George Barna's research. You can see this yourself. He has a website, culturefaith.com, but he's been tracking what he calls the SageCons. That's the spiritually active, governance engaged conservative. That's like the core of the evangelical movement. All right. Anyway, he says a latest survey from the American Culture and Faith Institute conducted in the swing state of Ohio confirms that even the Christian conservative population has made substantial shifts in opinion. Ohio is one of the most important swing states in the current election season, along with Florida, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. These four states hold the key to the one who is likely to become America's 45th president. Now, as I mentioned, after the conventions, after the primary season was over, 67% of SageCons were supporting Donald Trump. That's it. All right. The number has changed significantly. It's come to this point just in the last week. 92% in Ohio are now supporting Donald Trump. The proportion of undecided voters has plummeted to a mere 1% of the SageCons. Among those backing Mr. Trump, the proportion saying they are totally committed to voting for him has jumped from 59% in May to 83% today. Now, the most common motivation, as I mentioned earlier, for backing Mr. Trump is now his positions on key issues. And those issues have actually changed during the course of this campaign, which I found pretty fascinating. The top two issues are now viewed as abortion and the Supreme Court nominations. 30% and 28% respectively. The latter has been mentioned was only mentioned by 9% in May. I mean, that's what the discussion, the conversation that's taken place during the campaign has driven that number. And what was interesting on the life issue is that after the third debate, in which both candidates clarified their, you know, their opposing views on abortion, Christian conservatives have kind of been reawakened to the significance of that particular issue as well as its relationship to the Supreme Court. That's what kind of catapulted that issue to the forefront of issues. That may have been one of the most significant debate moments for Donald Trump of this entire election, when he, I mean, spent the first part, I would say it was, I don't know, it was 15, 20 minutes of the first part of the debate talking about the Supreme Court. He wanted to point pro-life justices and the fact that he wanted to end partial birth abortion or late-term abortion. It seems to have made a significant difference in his numbers among these SageCons. Now, how important are these SageCons? I'm not crazy about that name, but that's what George Barna calls them. They represent about 12% of the voting population. Now, that's one out of every eight voters. It's about the same size as the African-American vote, and almost as big as the labor union vote. I mean, it's not enough. I mean, they can't elect a candidate. You can't. No candidate can win an election simply by having the support of SageCons. But it's difficult to win without them. Now, and they tend to be a group of a voting bloc that turns out more regularly. They're kind of chronic voters. Now, they expect in this cycle, George Barna is predicting that we'll see a greater than 85% of these Christian conservatives turning out to vote. And see, that's where, folks, we make a difference, is that we vote disproportionately to our size in the communities that we live in and the country as a whole. That's why voter turnout is so important, and being informed and being engaged, and how your vote actually could be worth a lot more simply because you're informed and you take the time to vote. I was thinking about this today and all of the money. You know, I spent the last few days traveling in Virginia and North Carolina. And, you know, a lot of effort, a lot of money spent on voter turnout, trying to get people to turn out to vote. And, you know, we really shouldn't have to do that. I mean, it is a privilege to live in a country in which you can decide the fate of your country by the leaders that you select. And having to prod people to go to the polls is just, it's amazing to me. I mean, I'm there. I got to vote. It's my right, but it's my duty, I believe, as a Christian. But when we vote, and if we are, you know, 85, 90% of us, of the evangelical world, are registered, informed, and voting, I mean, we have influence beyond our size. So, folks, it's so critical that you go and that you vote. Be informed. Be informed. All right? And you can inform yourself with the latest information at tonyperkins.com. All right. When we come back, I'm going to open up the phone lines, but here's what I want to do. Now, this might not work because I know all of you are informed and engaged, but there might be some of you who have just made your decisions for maybe issue reasons, platform reasons. Maybe you've realized how corrupt one candidate is and you just have to vote. Maybe you weren't a week ago or 2 weeks ago. If you've made your decision to go and vote in the last week, I want to hear from you. I want to know who you're going to vote for and why you came to that point. When we return here on Washington Watch.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
I think that we are called not to worry about our finances as long as we are honoring and pleasing God with those same finances.
Stewardship matters, even in these uncertain times.
God is faithful to help us weather the storms.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Financial Preparation for Uncertain Times with Dan Celia and all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Hey, for those of you listening in the Baton Rouge area, I want to invite you to join me this Sunday at Greenville Springs Baptist Church for an Election Sunday service. Special Sunday focused on the election. An appeal to heaven. We'll have many of the candidates for state and local office will be there, along with a number of elected officials, and then we'll have a good old jambalaya dinner on the grounds afterwards. I'll be speaking. So if you're in the Baton Rouge area, join us this Sunday, 10:30 a.m. at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. All right. Here's the question. I know a lot of you listen that are hardcore, but I want to try to see if the trends are holding across the country, that many people who have been holding out simply because maybe they don't like the two candidates, they had concerns, they had issues, they were conflicted. Now we're coming down to it. We're 5 days away, and they've decided to vote. Why is that? What is it? Is it policies? Is it the corruption? Is it, you know, what is it? I want to know, kind of doing my own survey here. So I want you to call me, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on today's conversation. And first, we're going to go to Virginia, which has almost become another swing state. It's gotten so tight there in the state of Virginia. We've got Thomas on the line. Thomas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
All right, Thomas. So you've made a decision within the last week?
Yeah, I've been fairly conflicted this whole time. Trump was never my candidate, and honestly, he's still not. I've been considering Trump only because I just couldn't bring myself to vote for Hillary. But the only reason that I could come up to really vote for him was that he wasn't Hillary. And I decided a couple days ago that as a Christian, I really shouldn't be living in the fear of another candidate, and that I should really vote for the values that I believe in, and for that reason, I'm voting for Evan McMullen. Okay. I've got a lot of hate because of that. But I just don't believe Trump when he says he's carrying these conservative policies. He has not traditionally been conservative. A lot of religious leaders that I respect have said that he's, you know, he's been born again, even just recently. I know Dr. Dobson has talked about, you know, he's just recently come to Christ and he's a baby Christian. And I hope that's true. You know, I pray that that is true and that God does work in his heart. But, you know, I just don't believe it. I can't judge his heart. It's not on me to judge his heart, but it is on me to judge his fruit. And his fruit and his past is filled with lies and deception. And so is Hillary's. He's definitely not worse than she is. She's definitely worse. And, you know, Johnson's just not a candidate that I can get behind some of his views. But with Trump, you know, he says he's pro-life, but he's also praised Planned Parenthood. And I just can't vote for Trump. And so... Okay. I do feel we have a duty to vote as Christians.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stand up for my values. I'm going to stand up for Christian principles and go ahead and vote for McMullen.
All right. Well, Thomas, thanks for calling. Appreciate you listening and calling in today. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Texas where Kat is on the line and says, still on the fence. Kat, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hi. The caller right in front of me kind of stole my thunder. My issue is the fact that Evan McMullen is actually in the race. You know, if he wasn't in the race, okay, the only choices are Trump and Hillary. I've already looked at the other third-party candidates, and they don't hold my beliefs, so I would have to hold my nose and vote for Trump. But the fact that Evan is actually running and actually does hold our principles, and you know, my biggest issue with Trump, I don't know that we can believe a word he says, because he lied so much in the primary. If you look at the attacks he did on Ted Cruz and all the flip-flopping he's done on what his platform is, to me it seems like he'll just say anything to get elected. And you know, I've heard from other people, okay, this is far-fetched, but my biggest concern with Trump, you know, when it comes right down to it, I have to be able to look God in the eye for my vote. Mm-hmm. And be able to explain to God why I did this. And to say, well, I only voted for him because I didn't want Hillary, and then far-fetched, but Trump could end up causing us to get into nuclear war because he's such a loose cannon. I just don't know. I mean, I will tell you for sure I am going to vote, but I have no idea yet. I mean, nobody's been able to tell me a good enough reason other than, well, we don't want Hillary to vote for Trump. And so...
What about the policies that we've talked about in terms of, like, you look at the platforms that the two parties have embraced? And look, realistically, practically, we are a two-party country, a system. We've never had a third-party candidate in modern times win, and it's not going to happen today. So you have two parties that have two polar opposite views of the world. And as we've talked about on this program before, about 80% of the time they adhere to those policy platforms. Does that factor in to your consideration?
It does a little bit, but at the same time, again, Trump is such a loose cannon. I don't know that he's not lying about every single thing he's saying, you know, and then everybody will say checks and balances. Well, look how great that worked with Obama. You know,
well, do you believe... I give you on that. I mean, I can't guarantee you that he's going to do what he says he's going to do. But do you believe that Hillary's going to do what she says she's going to do?
Absolutely. I think she's completely honest about what she's doing. And I definitely don't want her. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, again, I hear the whole, well, we've never ever had a third party in it. Well, maybe if we all banded together, maybe we would get...
Well, but see, that's if we all banded together, I think we would have a different outcome in the primary system. That's where the primaries come in. I mean, that's where you get behind a candidate in the primaries, and we're very close. A lot of evangelicals got behind Ted Cruz, but he was came up a little bit short, and Donald Trump was the one who was able to cobble together enough to capture the nomination. But I think, you know, it's realistically, I mean, Kat, it's going to come down to either Hillary or Donald Trump. That's the two. And I think as I looked at it, it's more the it comes down to the policies and what they have stated. And you're right. It's a fair assessment, Kat, to say, I don't know that I can trust him. I understand that 100%. I do trust Hillary. I trust her to do exactly what she says she's going to do, and that is scary. Kat, thanks so much for calling, and I am glad that you are still working through this and intending on voting. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's go to Iowa, where Jessica is on the line. Jessica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there.
How you doing today?
Great.
Good. All right, so where are you?
On the map, Iowa, northwest Iowa, so in Sioux County, and for who I am going to vote for, you know, obviously it's a hot topic right now, and there's a lot of political signs and mail and calls and all that jazz, but what I think voting is about is voting for who we think best represents us as people, our beliefs, our, you know, what we want the future to look like. And so with that being said, you know, and also there's a lot of, you know, just like fear tactics, and I don't think that's right. Why be feared into voting for someone? You know, that's not a healthy relationship. And so my vote is going to go to a third-party candidate, Jill Stein. And I know third parties are getting a lot of grief, and they're not given the chance. Oh, you know, it's a two-party system. That's just how it is. That's how it's always been. But, you know, if we keep voting for crooked candidates, we're going to allow the corruption to continue. And so, you know, people say, oh, well, if you vote third party, it's a vote for, you know, this person or that person. But I think, hey, my vote represents me, and I'm going to put that behind this person. It's not a cancellation of another vote. It's a vote for that person. That's the person that best represents me and my values and who I want, you know, my family and children to look up to. And so it's a, I don't know, I don't want to say it's a hard decision, but I do, you know, I don't like Hillary and I don't like Donald Trump. Neither of them represent my values, and, you know, Donald Trump can say all these awful things, but we don't have necessarily the proof that he's going to, you know, do all of these things, whereas, like, Hillary, you know, says these things, but, you know, is she going to do them? What are her alternative motives? And so both of the candidates have not gained my trust, and I think a lot of other people are in the same boat as me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough. Jessica, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. All right, folks, 866-372-7234. We're going to go to North Carolina, one of those key swing states that we've been spending some time in, and we have Carolyn on the line. Carolyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. Okay, so you were just recently in North Carolina, you said.
Yes, we've got a bus tour. In fact, the bus is still rolling. I jumped off, and but the bus is still moving. So, yes, we're going around to all 100 counties there to let people know they need to vote, need to be involved. You got not only the presidential election, but you've got some critical state elections there in the state of North Carolina as well.
Yeah, and that was. I have two things I wanted to bring up. One of them is, what do you think about what Pat McCrory did as far as the transgender bathroom thing? And do you feel like he's going to remain standing, or is he going to cave and just kind of leave us all hanging? And then the other question I have for you, yeah, these people, I don't know if they're detractors or if they're just blinded. I don't want to be rude, but you're right. It's either going to be Hillary or it's going to be Donald Trump. And I feel like if we just waste our votes, the Electoral College is going to step in and take care of that for everybody. But, yeah, and as far as what the lady had just said about worrying about Donald Trump being a loose cannon. Hillary is the one who says she's leaving nukes on the table, right? So that's a huge concern. I'm terrified about that. I do not trust her, and I'm thinking she's going to end up in jail anyway. If no one is listening to what's going on in the news right now, I mean, every single day there's something coming out. And it's been like that with her and Bill Clinton for eons. I mean, they're just horrible people, I feel.
Well, it looks like they were obviously trading access for monetary gain. And that goes all the way back to the Clinton presidency when they were basically selling nights in the Lincoln bedroom. So they've profited from their public positions. But, Carolyn, we're going to run out of time, so I want to answer your questions because that was a very good, valid question about Pat McCrory in the state of North Carolina, who he and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest and the legislature responded to the mayor of Charlotte, who, working with the Human Rights Campaign, this rabid pro-homosexual group, pushed this gender-confused bill through that would have forced private entities under the penalty of law to adopt this same, you know, gender-free, gender-neutral bathrooms and all these other policies. And the state leaders stepped in and said, no, you can't force that on private entities, and you're not going to put it into public facilities like schools. Now, if a private company wants to do it, they can. That's their business, but you're not going to force them to. And they have stood up to the left at great price. I mean, they've been pounded by the lackeys for the homosexual movement, some of these corporations like PayPal and Nike and even some of these college athletic associations, and they're still standing. So, Carolyn, I actually was talking to your governor yesterday, and I have no question whatsoever that they will continue to stand up and stand for public safety, privacy issues, and for common sense. So, yes, I think they will continue to stand. And if you're in the state of North Carolina, I encourage you to be supportive of those officials who support family values. ncvotes.org. We've got some information up there for you on that. Give you a personalized voter guide if you live in North Carolina. Also, TonyPerkins.com, other resources available for you. Folks, not going to get to the rest of the calls. I do appreciate you all calling in. I want to encourage you to think through this process, and I'm going to echo what Carolyn said, that we are a two-party system. I understand. You know, you're frustrated. You want somebody who represents your values. That's why we get involved in the primaries. And we work hard, and we try to get candidates that best reflect those values. And then in the end, really, the rule of thumb is to vote for the one who's going to do the least amount of damage to our freedoms. And I think that's very clear in this election. I really do. Look at the platforms. I think it'll tell you. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks for being with us. I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where it says, When you have taken your stand, when you've prayed about it, when you've prepared, and when you have taken that stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.